Hey there, welcome to the Cultivated Family Podcast. I'm Megan Hillica, and this is where we dive into grief and loss and all that I've learned through the loss of my daughter, Aria. I want to share tools and the things I've learned along the way to help me carry my grief, along with interviews and stories of other people who have experienced pain and heartache in their life, and how we can, as friends, support one another through our tough times so that we can have the joys again as well. You are not alone, my friend, so let's dive in.
Hi, Melissa. Welcome to the Cultivated Family Podcast. I have been listening to your podcast for a while, and I'm really excited to chat with you today.
Thank you so much for having me. I love the work that you do, and I'm excited to be here and share about my journey and hopefully support your community as well.
Yeah, thank you. So to start, can you talk about who you are? Who is Melissa? Where do you come from?
Sure. So That's a long question, right? We could do it for a while. But...
yeah, however long you want to go, we're good.
Yeah. Well, and for the interest of your listeners, I will not go on too long about that. But, you know, I really identify the most as Layden's mom. So I'm a bereaved mom. And I started my grief journey 5 years ago when my daughter died from necrotizing endocarditis at Boston Children's Hospital. And from that, so much of the work that I do and the way that I live has sprung. So previously, I was a teacher, I was a coach. I've always wanted to educate and impact and empower. And since losing Layden, the realm of which that I do that has changed. So now I'm a life coach. I co-founded a business coaching gut health and mindset, and my business partner coaches fitness and nutrition. We actually also now coach online entrepreneurs in building their own business. I host my podcast, Grief, Guts, and Green Smoothies, so talking a lot about grief and just different ways of managing life and kind of stepping into our own power and having courage. I'm a runner. I'm a yoga instructor. I only became a yoga instructor after losing my daughter, Layden, and yoga was really healing in my journey. And so I decided this is something I needed to now teach. And I run for my daughter, Layden. So I was always an athlete, but now my run, my miles have a lot more meaning. So, you know, in short, you know, as Layden's mom, as a bereaved mom, you know, I'm a coach and an educator and really trying to support people to feel their best, no matter what their circumstances are, because that was something I had to learn to do as well.
Yeah, that's amazing. Your story is really amazing. And I love the energy you bring to it. You talk a lot about energy. And I think the energy you bring to what you're doing is really uplifting and helpful for a lot of people.
Thank you. That's the goal, you know?
Yeah.
You're just going to throw it out there and see what sticks. And you're like, I hope this is helpful, because it would be too bad if, you know, this helped no one.
Yeah. No, I think it's helping a lot of people.
Yeah.
You share your story of grief and your loss of Layden very openly, and you talk about her a lot, and you talk about spreading her light. So can you dive in a little bit more to who Layden was and is to you, and how she's still with you and sharing her story?
I love that
today.
Question. Yeah. So I guess to me, I mean, Layden is and was and will always be a fighter. I mean, she was a fighter. And she, you know, one of the things that kind of impacted her care was almost that she didn't present with as sick as she was. So her case was termed a catastrophe. We knew when she was born, she had congenital heart disease. I have congenital heart disease as well. I was a Division I athlete. Her case was relatively simple in the world of cardiac care. And we're right at Boston Children's Hospital, which is, you know, the best in the world. So really, the alarms weren't raised too high at the time. And she was such a fighter that we didn't really know. Nobody knew or caught on to how sick she really was inside. And so that was her intestines, and they were damaged. And so she lived from February 2014. She spent about a month at home, and then the rest of her life was about 99 nights were at Boston Children's Hospital. And most of them, you know, she other than having like a little feeding tube in her nose, like she looked like a healthy baby. And then she had her heart repair. We were going to go home. We were like all excited, and all of a sudden her stomach began expanding and we didn't really know what was going on. And they went in and they did an abdominal surgery and said it would be about a 2-week delay and then we'd go home. And then that wasn't how it worked. 2 days later, they did another abdominal surgery, kept her abdomen open because it was quote unquote angry. And things just worsened from there. She went on a machine called ECMO, which is basically life support that requires a nurse to run it. She had two 24/7 hour nurses keeping her alive. When they took her off ECMO, they said she wouldn't live, and she did. And then she transitioned onto dialysis. You know, I thought we were going home. She was just such a fighter, but essentially she never stopped fighting. It's just her body gave way on her. Like her body literally shut down. She was still alert. She was on max dosages of morphine and sedatives, and she would still open her eyes and she would still grab my hand and kick her feet. Like she was there, you know, she was fighting. I never ever once felt like she wasn't there. And so through this whole experience, it just brings so much into perspective. I mean, through the journey of motherhood, right, you learn so much, but then having a sick child and then, you know, losing a child, it's just, I've learned so much. Unwelcomed. I wish I didn't learn it.
Yeah.
But I feel like as Layden's mom, if I can spread the things that she taught, it's my way of spreading her light. And so that's where, you know, shining her light comes on, because she just was such a bright light. And for me, nothing means more than doing whatever I can to help her continue to shine.
Yeah, that's a beautiful story about Layden. I think that is a roller coaster, a lot of ups and downs.
Yeah, you know, when you're
expecting to go home. And you had shared recently too about that it was a shock still to you, even till she died. And I think that can be really difficult for people to understand when they're looking in, you know?
But
I think we don't really realize the finality of death until it happens.
No.
I think it's hard to accept and to like, or even think that it's going to happen, you know, that it's real.
So true. And I think even like the fact that when they took her off of the ECMO machine, which was like that life support machine that I talked about, when they took her off of that and said she wouldn't live, and she did, it was like, okay, well, they're taking her off of this and they're saying she's not going to live, but she's going to live. So I think that was playing into it as well. And I'll never forget, she took her last breath. Her father and I were both holding her. And I literally just like looked up and I was like yelled out, like, wait, is that really it? Like, wait, this is really it. Like, it was like, I was in such shock, you know? And it's like they had told us and we had said our goodbyes and we'd done all that, but I was just shocked. And I was kind of like, well, now what? Right? Like, we just leave the hospital without Layden, you know? Like, it was awful.
Yeah. Those moments are just not,
not
something that you wish on anybody else.
Ever. Nobody. Nope.
So Layden, did she die of neck or she had neck?
Yeah, neck was her cause of death. And then organ failure and renal failure, which were both subsequent complications from neck.
Okay, so do you want to talk a little bit about neck and what it is? Because I know you do work with that now too.
Yeah, and it took me a while to get to being able to work with neck because I was so angry about it. And I thought, like, well, what if I knew? Like, I didn't know what neck was. I'm sure most people listening don't know what neck is. It's necrotizing enterocolitis. It's most commonly presents with babies who are born premature, but now they're correlating it more and more with babies actually with heart conditions, which explains Layden. So neck essentially is sick intestines. It's like the easiest way to explain it. And when our, you know, our guts, everything we do, it operates everything. And so without our ability to, you know, eliminate our ability to digest food, to process food, to get out toxins, you know, we can't thrive. We can't grow. It's a pretty deadly disease. And Layden wasn't diagnosed with it until it was on her death certificate. And for me, it was like, wait, we're at the best hospital in the world. And this wasn't diagnosed. Like, I don't understand. She had been put on what was called neck watch, like, oh, we're going to watch for this. But I think that, you know, better care could have been done around that, for sure. And I say that because I hope that learning is done, right? And
yeah.
instead of just identifying a problem, well, that's why I'm on the board of directors now for the next society, because I want to help find a solution, right? I don't want to just, like, point to a problem.
Yeah.
So, you know, neck is something that premature babies and babies with cardiac complications are vulnerable to. It's thick intestines, and it is very often fatal.
So with the new research and stuff, are they coming out or, like, looking into it? Is there things somebody can do when they have those kind of?
Yeah. So, yeah, anyone listening, if this is something that impacts you or anyone you know, I highly recommend going to the Neck Society on their website, because they have some downloads on questions to ask. If your baby is even in the NICU, I would recommend checking it out, because you're just more vulnerable on cross-contamination. And there's just all these different great resources on the website that are free and that are just going to help parents feel empowered.
Okay, that's amazing. I love giving more information to people.
Yeah,
and more,
exactly.
Yeah. Okay, so how have green smoothies, gut health, and grief become intertwined for you?
Yeah, so they are very intertwined for me. So after Layden died, understandably, I had a lot of resistance to gut health, understanding neck. But in time, I was like, okay, well, I can be really pissed off about the thing that puts me in this bereaved, you know, club.
Mm-hmm.
Or I can understand it. And to me, that just felt like it honored Layden. So I began studying it, and I found that I actually had a really sick gut myself. I just didn't know. And gut health is going on way too frequently now. But
mm-hmm.
Essentially, just the easiest way I can explain it is your gut working optimally? And when your gut's working optimally, right, it's healthy. And that's going to impact your skin. That's going to impact your energy. That's going to impact your mood, your sleep, your bloat, your digestion, your weight gain, your weight loss. And here I was, someone who was healthy. I was running marathons. But I was taking skin medications. I was carrying Tums around all the time. I was on anxiety medication. And so when I began studying gut health and treating my own gut, it's now been 3.5 years since I've even taken a pill. Like, I won't even take a Tylenol or Tums or anything.
That's amazing.
Never mind a prescription medication. And
yeah.
And that's my choice, right? Everyone's entitled to their own choice. But so that is how grief and gut health are really intertwined. And so when I talk about green smoothies, that's kind of representative of gut health. And I talk about guts, so my podcast, Grief, Guts, and Green Smoothie, mm-hmm. I actually mean courage.
Mm-hmm.
And the courage to, you know, do what you're doing, to have these conversations that are uncomfortable, the courage to stand in our truths, the courage to make decisions that might be hard, might be challenging, but they align with what you value and they align with what's important to you. So to me, that's guts. So mm-hmm. grief actually really intensified my understanding both of health and of courage.
Did you know that I have a completely free community on Facebook for grieving mothers? You have to answer a couple questions in order to get in, because I want it to be a safe space for grieving moms. I would love if you came and joined us. It's called Living with Grief, Child Loss with Megan Hillica. I share stuff on there. I go live in there. I would love if you would come and find support and support others. It's a great place to not be so alone in your grief and find others who are walking the same path as you. So again, that's Living with Grief, Child Loss with Megan Hillica. I'd love to see you in there.
Yeah, I think grief just can amplify any, it kind of forces you to go down a path of growth if you want it, or it's a great teacher, you know,
yeah.
grief is,
yep.
and there's
yep.
so much to learn. And I love how all of those just kind of combine together for you.
Mm-hmm. Not many people, but for me, they do.
Yeah, for you. But I love the, I don't know, there's so much about health and mental health and wellness. And I love the, like, the gut work that you're doing, and how, I love how it all ties together. It's really awesome.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that.
So we all find our own ways of coping and working through our grief. What has been the most helpful ways that you have found for yourself?
Yeah, I think it's really important to acknowledge that everyone has different ways and there's not one way that's right or wrong. Right. And Layden's father grieves very differently than I do. And it's important for, you know, him to feel empowered to grieve his own way. And I just want anyone listening to know, I share that because I want anyone listening to know, like, whatever your grief journey looks like it's yours. Right. And I think it kind of, you know, I had a grief coach and one of the things she taught me was that grief just kind of like puts our personality traits and quirks on steroids. So the things that we struggle with, like feel like they're on steroids, but then also our strengths, the things that we do well, kind of go on steroids. So for me, talking and writing, those are things that have always kind of been strengths of mine. And I think talking through grief, doing a lot of writing through grief really helped me in my journey. And then finding ways to maintain my identity as Layden's mom. So when we look at loss, there are a lot of losses. So the primary loss is the loss of Layden, but a secondary loss is, you know, the loss of being a mom. A secondary loss is the loss of seeing my brothers as uncles, right? Secondary loss is the loss of mothering with my best friends, and we all had babies at the same time. So there, it's so important to know, like, there are a lot of losses that come from your primary loss. So you can't do anything about your primary loss. For me, being able to feel like Layden's mom, being able to feel like I'm taking care of her in a way that feels right for me, has been something that's been really important in, to me in my grief journey.
Yeah, that is a important thing, especially when Layden is your only child, as far as I understand, right?
Yep, she is.
So, you know, you ask those questions, Kate. Am I still a mom? Of course you are. You had Layden, you loved her, you still love her. You shine her light every day, and it's such a beautiful way of keeping her and being her mom.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that.
I loved your analogy of building your life around grief. You talked about that on your podcast one time. And so how did you begin doing this with running in marathons?
Yeah, I think it's recognizing, and I'll say this to anybody, whether they're grieving or not, there's no perfect time to start to feel better. Right. So wherever you're at, there's no perfect timing. So often we're like, all right, well, I'm going to wait until this, and then I'm going to do that thing that's going to make me feel better. It's like, no, we got to do that now, like yesterday. And so finding things like, again, grief is kind of amplifies your personality traits. And so for me, I'm an athlete. I grew up an athlete, and so I like to still think I am, though. I don't know anymore. but running the marathon was a big part of that. And, you know, I promised Layden, we were, those of you not from the Boston area, the Boston Marathon is, you know, like the most famous marathon, and it's really historic, and it's really hard to get into. You have to run for a charity or you have to qualify. And we were at Children's Hospital Marathon Day 2014, and there's so much energy and so much excitement and just so much, right? And I looked at Layden, I actually took a video of her, and I said, like, next year we're running a marathon for Children's Hospital, because at that point we were going home. Like, we thought we were going home. And so after Layden died in June, it was end of August where I was kind of like, I think I have to keep that promise. Like, I can't make that promise conditional. Like, I said, this is what we're going to do. Like, I need to do it. And I did. I trained. It was really hard. My very first day going to a team practice, I cried. I was intimidated. I was afraid. I didn't really want to talk to anybody. I was afraid to share my story. And I want to offer that version of me, because if anyone listening to this is in grief, I want you to know, like, different versions of you are okay, and they're all there. And in time, I've now transitioned to, not only was I, you know, back then I didn't want to talk to anybody, and I definitely didn't want to talk about my grief. Whereas now I host a podcast on it, and I'm the ambassador for the Boston Children's Hospital Marathon team. So, you know, and everybody knows Layden. So I just think it's so important not to layer the difficulty of grief by thinking we need to be in a certain place or feel a certain way, because it's just not true.
Yeah. Grief is not a race amongst like each other, trying to, there's a, so much comparison between grief of within yourself that you should be somewhere else, and then like within other people. And it's just the only place we need to be is right now and in the moment where we are with our grief.
Exactly. And I think the one thing I do say we don't want to do is deny it. When we deny it, it grows. And when we deny it, it gets like suffocated inside of us, and it will come out in some way, right? That's like when all of a sudden, like when I've gone through periods of denying what I really need and how I feel, that's when like all of a sudden I'm snapping at somebody at the phone, or I lose patience when Starbucks takes too long, or those are signs that something's not being tended to inside. And you got to listen to those, or we have really major issues, and nobody grieving needs to add complications or heaviness. You don't.
No, you don't. But that's a very, I think, as I've been working with people and talking with people, is what I see is the denying or stuffing of grief, trying to pretend it's not there or run from it or keep busy. And it's what you kind of said, it needs to be tended to, and I've been saying that grief needs to be tended to, it needs to be cared for, it needs to be acknowledged. It really, it's not going to go away. There's just no way around it, even though I wish there was a way around it, but
So I agree. And the more that we try and avoid it, the more it's gonna actually have control over us.
So I know that you would take Layden back 100%. Of course, we all would take our children back. I would take Aria back instead of learning these lessons from grief. But grief can be a really big teacher. And so, what is one of the biggest lessons that you have learned on your grief journey?
Oh, that's such a great question. I think one of the biggest lessons I've learned is to focus on myself, my needs, my personal growth. Like now I'm obsessed with personal growth. I always kind of denied my needs before. I wanted to put everyone else first. I can help and impact so many more people by taking care of myself. And I don't know that I ever would have learned that lesson if I wasn't so broken and forced to take care of myself. And so it was like being forced to like actually pour into me is what really allowed me to see the power of doing it. So I think that's one of the biggest lessons I learned from grief, and everything else kind of comes from that. I mean, having courage, standing in your truth, being resilient, knowing circumstances don't define who you are, letting go of attachment to the way things quote unquote should be. Right, and letting go of that expectation, like we're not entitled to anything in this world, right? Nothing. And I think I felt a sense of entitlement, like what the sorry, I hope that's okay for me saying here. Like what the why was I deprived of this? And then now I see like I wasn't entitled to anything I wanted. I think I was worthy of, but it doesn't mean I was entitled to having something different, you know?
Yeah, I think it's a really, really beautiful lesson, but really painful lesson. And I feel like grief has taught me so many things, and I would definitely take Aria back, but those lessons, like the person who I have become, I don't want to go back to who I was
I
before.
feel the same exact way. I just kind of pressed in what you said there. I feel the same exact way. Like I actually don't like that version of me isn't who I want to be. I know who she was. I love that version of me, but I was much less aware. I was much less, I'm more grateful now. Right? Like I've had my world stripped. I'm way more grateful now than I ever was before. Isn't that unbelievable?
Yeah, it's amazing. If you allow it to be there and you work towards it, you can get there. But grief can also take a different way where you don't allow that to happen. And everybody gets to decide themselves too. But I just want people to know that it's possible to get there if you want it and if you want to work for it. So at the end, I always ask these cultivating compassion questions, So you're ready to dive into those?
I am 100% ready.
All right. So what is one thing you could offer to someone who is struggling and feels really alone in their pain?
I would like to offer that your feeling of being alone is so real, but the reality and the truth of being alone isn't necessarily, it isn't real. And I want to make space to honor that that feeling is real and there's nothing wrong with having it, but remind you that you're not alone. You have so many people energetically connected to you and communities that want to hold you and people that are there to support you. And as you feel ready, begin to lean into them and allow them to hold you, because carrying ourselves at such a traumatic time is really hard.
Yeah, I think we all need all the support we can get and all the support we'll allow. Let people
Yeah.
help. Yes. What is one book that has encouraged you and helped you?
I love Brené Brown.
Hmm.
She talks a lot about
Yep.
shame, and I think there's a lot of shame that goes into grief. The Four Agreements is another one of my personal favorite books as well.
I've heard of the Four Agreements. I need to read that
It's
one.
great. Yeah, it's really great.
What do you wish someone who has never been through grief would understand?
There's no timeline. There's no one way. And that when we avoid talking to people who are in grief because we don't know what to say, we're compounding their loneliness, right? We're adding loss on top of loss. So by saying, I'm not going to say anything because I don't know what to say, that's actually compounding their difficulty. And so even if you show up and say, I don't know what to say, but I'm here, or what do you need? I love you. Like that's powerful enough, right? It doesn't have to be fancy or perfect, but know that it doesn't look one way. The way you grieve will be different, or the way you anticipate that you would grieve doesn't look like how someone else is grieving. So let them do it the way that they need to and show up for them however you can.
I love that. I think people do get so scared, and then I love the way you put it of it's compounded, because I think people just think that they're thinking of themselves in that moment, that they're
Yes.
too scared to say anything, so they say nothing. But if you want to help and you want to show up, then show up and
Yes.
just be unafraid to mess up, I guess. Because
Yeah.
you might mess up, you
Yeah.
might say the wrong thing. Every person
Yeah.
responds differently and whatever, but I think if you show up and you're showing love, that
Yep.
eventually they will understand that you are trying to show up with love. Maybe not in the moment, but
Yeah. Yep,
so
absolutely.
thanks for chatting with me. I love following your journey and what you're sharing. How can other people connect with you and follow your journey?
Oh, thank you. Thank you for asking. I think it's so powerful to connect. Like, I just love learning about people's stories. And I am pretty active on Instagram. I'd say that's where I hang out most of the time. My handle is Guts and Grief. So, two of those three things. And you can also check out the gut health work that I do at Move with MM, is the IG handle. So it's Move dot with MM. But my handle, if you want to just say hi, hear about Layden, see pictures of Layden, that's guts, the letter N, or N, I'm sorry. Guts, the letter N, and then grief, all one word.
Okay, and then your podcast
Yeah, my podcast is, thank you. Grief.
can't forget that.
Can't forget that. My podcast is Grief, Guts, and Green Smoothies.
Right. Well, I will link those
Yeah.
up below so that everybody can follow you and listen to your journey too. Thanks for
Yeah, thank you
chatting with
so
me.
much. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for joining me on another episode of the Cultivated Family Podcast. While this episode is over, you can continue to join me in conversation on Instagram or Facebook at Cultivated Family. I would love to see you there.